You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
We have members of Congress who are investing in companies or industries that will benefit from a new Cold War or conflict, for example. And these are the very same people who are making the policies who have a vested interest in stoking those tensions and amping up this new Cold War, directly benefiting from it, and simultaneously undermining our actual national security for our country and the interests of the American people. This is happening right before our eyes. We, the American people, need to see it, recognize it, and bring about an end to this corruption.
And somebody should go to jail. Let me add that. That was former Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, Democrat. This is July 22nd, 2022. We are live streaming right now at Larry Connors USA on Rumble.com. You go to Rumble.com, search engine, Larry Connors USA. You'll push it. It'll take you to previous Rumbles. You also see a button where you can push for live. If you can't watch it live now, it will be there for you later to see. And again, you can always subscribe for free to that or any of our podcasts at LarryConnorsUSA.com. Cost you nothing. Glad to have you not only get involved, but share. So there was former Hawaii Congresswoman Gabbard talking about all the members of Congress who schemed to get rich. There was a bill introduced when she was running in 2012 demanding full accounting. But if they don't do it, if they try to hide, fudge figures that are late with numbers, you know what the fine is? Something like $200. Pelosi won't answer questions about her husband Paul buying $5 million in stocks for a semi-chip conductor company, knowing the Senate is preparing to give a $52 billion subsidy to that industry. Does that not smell a little fishy? Of course it does. Congressman Democrat Swalwell, who should have been ousted because of his ties to a Chinese spy, remains in Congress, and he started going over again the rape of the 10-year-old the other day that had to go across state lines, supposedly, to get the abortion. But he didn't get the word from the abortion, anti-abortion, or the abortion advocates, quit using the word abortion. It's weaponized. It raises the emotion. Yeah, Congresswoman Kathleen Rice, Democrat in New York, the other day said, we need to quit using that word. Find one less negative. No one told Swalwell. But he spends a lot of time on it in a congressional hearing. And basically, that child is being raped over and over and over again for the benefits of the Democrats. John Daniel Davidson is a senior editor at The Federalist. He has out a piece on how radical Democrats claim they love democracy. That's what they claim, but they don't. And their reaction right now to what they're doing about the Supreme Court ruling affecting Roe v. Wade is a perfect example. So after you hear Swalwell go through his congressional testimony with a pro-lifer and then an abortionist, you get a clearer picture. But John Daniel Davidson will be joining us. You're also going to hear from Congressman Lee Zeldin. He could have been stabbed to death last night while speaking out about low or no bail for violent crimes. That's what he was doing in New York at a campaign rally. And a guy begins to approach him, comes up on the stage, and then Zeldin sees he's got some kind of a weapon in his hand, kind of like a knife, and starts coming at him. You're going to hear Congressman Zelder about that incident. And John Lebutier, former New York congressman, I want to get his approach and his ideas about that attempt to murder a sitting congressman. And again, what happened to the attacker? Yeah, what happened to the attacker after he was arrested reflects again where we are on the issue of law and order in this country, which is pretty much zero. So John Lebutier will be joining us on that subject as well coming up later. We have an upside-down justice system. Oh, and the White House is suddenly claiming, look what we're doing for your gas prices. Lot to cover. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Your eyes are burning. You're sneezing. It's allergy season. Pollen readings are sky high. Heck, you can even see that yellow powder on everything. So that's also inside your air conditioning ducts. I suggest you call Wellington Environmental. Now, other companies will be glad to do the job, but they're going to come to your home or business, count the air ducts, and begin increasing the cost. In fact, the quoted price might even double. Wellington offers one price, no extras. You'll be charged exactly what Wellington quotes. So this is easy for you. Call 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You will breathe easier. Wellington has a AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington. I want you to know something special. John Beal Roofing constantly gives back to the community in so many ways, supporting more charities and good causes than any other local roofing company. Why? It's the right thing to do. Keep that in mind when you need a new roof, plus quality work at the lowest price, guaranteed. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
And with the stroke of a pen, abortion effectively became illegal in the state of Ohio. If you are over 6 weeks pregnant, tough luck. You can't get an abortion in Ohio. Just 3 days after that ban went into effect, a child abuse doctor had a 10-year-old rape victim in her office. Just 10 years old. The child was 6 weeks and 3 days pregnant. She was just 3 days too late to get an abortion. In Ohio, there is no exception for rape. So if that 10-year-old got an abortion in Ohio, she would be breaking the law. That doctor took action. She called a colleague in Indiana seeking help for her patient, and that doctor said she could help. So the young girl traveled to neighboring Indiana that currently has a 22-week abortion ban and received the health care she needed.
That is part of an MSNBC report, again, on this 10-year-old rape victim, confirmed rape. She was pregnant. But, of course, even when Joe Biden started talking about the other day, they withheld some very basic facts. We'll come back to that in a moment. But the point this MSNBC anchor is trying to make is that, see, this is what you got. This is what we have when we have a Supreme Court deciding we're going to let the states decide abortion laws, not a federal law of the land. We're going to get into that in more detail with my guest this hour, John Daniel Davidson at The Federalist, because he said this is, again, a perfect example of where you're going to hear the Democrats shout, we want democracy, we want democracy. But here, this is a ruling under our democratic laws, our U.S. Constitution, and it's not good enough for them, so they don't want it, and they're going to fight against it. And they're waging war verbally and escalating. And, of course, there have been reports of violence even against women's fertility clinics. All right, let's get, some of the basic facts out of the way. First of all, pray for the child. She was around 9, maybe a little closer to 10, when she was raped and got impregnated. And the doctor had put down on the police form she was raped by another juvenile, indicating age 17 or under. They failed to mention, no, the real age was 27. They failed to mention this was an illegal in the country. Now, someone might have attacked that same child and subjected her to that, but this guy wouldn't have if he had not been here illegally. And I mentioned the other day that for some reason the mother of the child suddenly started crying out and telling reporters, leave us alone, my child's fine, there's nothing here, and everything they're saying about the man that's been accused is wrong. Well, there was DNA, semen, detected in her. He pled guilty to it. She was pregnant, not just penetrated, but pregnant with this man's DNA. And I was saying then, why is the mother suddenly doing this? And at the time, I had a thought, but I thought, I don't want to go down that road. I don't have the facts. So I went with the base that maybe she was frightened or she's been threatened because he's here illegally. Well, now we're getting more word and understanding that he was living in the house with the mother and her daughter. And she might also, mom might also be here illegally. That hasn't been confirmed yet. But that makes sense now why suddenly she's defending the man. And I still don't understand it by any stretch of parental understanding how you would defend the guy that raped your own daughter. But that's why she was suddenly fighting back out against it. Now, those are some of the facts you're going to be hard-pressed to find in the state-controlled media. Now, back to the issue of could she or could she not have gotten an abortion in Ohio? I'm looking at a piece by Politico, and I will tell you, I'm not a lawyer, you know that, and this is very convoluted. It's going to be a patchwork of laws, we understand that, but this is not the only law that states have different rulings on, such as carrying a concealed weapon. It's acceptable in many states, it's your Second Amendment right. In other states, they find one on you, they will lock you up and charge you. Whereas your driver's license is a reciprocal law that they will recognize your driver's license from Missouri if you're somewhere else, or if you're from Texas and you're in Washington State. But the Ohio abortion law, according to Politico, outlaws the procedure once a fetal heartbeat is detected, which can be as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy. The girl apparently was 6 weeks and 3 days, as you heard. It does allow exceptions to prevent the death of the mother or prevent a serious risk of substantial and irreversible impairment of a major body function. Again, speaking of the mother. And experts say the law's language is too vague to be certain that it would have applied to this 10-year-old rape victim. The Attorney General of Ohio said the other day, said in this case she would have been able to get it. She did not have to go to a neighboring state. It was simply for political show. So that brings us back to this committee hearing, and Congressman Swalwell, Democrat of California, is questioning one of the witnesses that were brought in by pro-lifers. The witness is identified as, let me get her exact name here, Catherine Foster with Americans for United for Life, a pro-lifer. So here's some of that exchange.
Hey, Ms. Foster, you think a 10-year-old would choose to carry?
In the 10-year-old case, first of all, the Ohio...
No, my question is, would a 10-year-old choose to carry a baby?
In the Ohio case, the Ohio Attorney General said that abortion would have been justified.
Focus on the question, please. Would a 10-year-old choose to carry a baby?
I cannot...
Do you think a 10-year-old should choose to carry a baby?
I believe it would probably impact her life.
Oh, stop it right there. again, it's a delicate piece of ground I'm on here. I don't want to do anything else to build upon the trauma around that 10-year-old. And, of course, her name's not being released for obvious reasons. But here we have Swalwell asking this pro-lifer, do you think it's okay for a 10-year-old? You think she would want to carry the baby? Well, stop it right there. If you are all about women's rights and their body, the 10-year-old is a girl, female. What if she decided she wanted to carry it? What if you're going to go with the argument that he's trying to make it clear that this girl needed help? Then what about teaching transsexual attitudes and lifestyles to young children? You see the path they're on? They want to hold up the 10-year-old as an example. This child should not have been raped. Obviously, I agree. And the child should have been able to get an abortion. I don't disagree with that. But they're ignoring the very fact that they build all the rest of their liberal ideas on. It should be her choice. Her choice. Her choice if she wants to have a baby. Her choice if she wants to go transgender. Can you have it both ways? In their fantasy world, yes. They can put a foot in each of the worlds and argue them just as strongly. All right, let's go back to the response coming from Catherine Foster with the Americans for United for Life.
I believe it would probably impact her life, and so therefore it would fall under any exception and would not be an abortion.
Wait. It would not be an abortion if a 10-year-old with her parents made the decision not to have a baby that was a result of a rape?
If a 10-year-old became pregnant as a result of rape and it was threatening her life, then that's not an abortion. So it would not fall under any abortion restriction in our nation.
Ah. But Swalwell, as I said in the monologue, did not get the notice. Don't even use that word abortion anymore. One of his fellow Congress members, Kathleen Rice, Democrat in New York, suggested yesterday, we need to quit using the word abortion. Use one that's one less negative, because abortion weaponizes and creates too many emotions. But in this hearing, Swalwell has no problem with about it and making it a big deal and saying, wait, she would not be able to do it, have an abortion? So then he calls on another expert who's sitting there listening to all of this to try to shore up his argument that the 10-year-old had need of medical attention and that she would not want the baby. I guess nobody asked the child, did they? To my knowledge. And again, I'm not in favor of that child having that right or carrying the baby, but I'm also not in favor of a same 10-year-old or another 10-year-old deciding to go transgender against parental wishes or even with parental wishes. So Swalwell calls on somebody he thinks will back him up in the sense about, because the pro-lifer just said this would not fall under the laws of abortion of any law we have in the nation at this time. And therefore, it wouldn't really be an abortion. They're all mincing words. But Sarah Webelar, or Warbelow, is pro-abortion, and Swalwell, Congressman Swalwell, immediately turned to her.
Ms. Warbelow, are you familiar with disinformation?
Yes, I am.
Did you just hear some disinformation?
Yes, I heard some very significant disinformation.
Why don't you tell me about that?
Yes, an abortion is a procedure. It's a medical procedure that individuals undergo for a wide range of circumstances, including because they have been sexually assaulted, raped in the case of the 10-year-old. It doesn't matter whether or not there is a statutory exemption. It is still a medical procedure that is understood to be an abortion.
She is right about that. The clinical medical term. But what if a 10-year-old? Let's just expand beyond this case. What if a 10-year-old has, in their mind, consensual sex with another 10-year-old? Well, maybe let's make them a little bit older, maybe 13, 17, or even with a man that may or may not be related to her. And she wants to keep the child. Where are all of these pro-choicers then when it comes to let the woman decide? And again, the word abortion, according to the pro-choicers, saying it's been weaponized by pro-lifers to raise emotions, and the response that Congresswoman Rice got to that the other day, well, what should we say, murder the baby? Because that's what you're doing. Does a 10-year-old girl have rights, women's rights, ability to make her own choice when it comes to this, bearing a baby? If you Democrats, you radicals are going to say, yes, she does, because we allow her to make a transgender decision, you see what you created. Oh, it's too convoluted for you folks, isn't it? You can't figure that out. I'll just leave you with that puzzle, that riddle. You'll never come up with a solid answer. You'll just waffle around like you normally do. You don't want to really look at the facts. Now, a fact from yesterday, a incumbent congressman talking about law and order, and he's attacked, nearly killed.
Larry Connors USA.
He was saying, "You're done," and he lunged for me towards my neck area. I quickly grabbed his wrist and held it tight. And when I had my first debate of the Republican primary that just finished, one of the questions they asked me was, tell us something that the audience may not know about you. And I gave it a thought for a second. I said, well, I'm a black belt. I once won the world championships in sparring. At that moment when he was coming at me, it was a simple move. I just grabbed his wrist in a particular way to hold it there, and it was only for a few moments that was necessary for a bunch of people to tackle him. But once I saw that weapon, I heard him saying, "You're done," and he started lunging at me. Then I realized that this isn't somebody coming on stage to check the microphone.
Those are the words of incumbent Congressman Lee Zeldin, Republican. He was speaking at an event in New York, and suddenly this guy starts coming at him, shouting, "You're done," with a weapon to use to slash and cut. A candidate for the New York State Assembly said he followed the man onto the stage, and then when he saw he was trying to attack the congressman, he jumped him from behind, in addition to what you heard Congressman Zeldin say he did. The suspect has been identified. He's charged with attempted assault in the second degree. And sure as you would know, and even as predicted by Congressman Zeldin, the guy would go free on bail quickly. And sure enough, he has been released from police custody within hours of that arrest because of the indifference New York crime laws. Low bail or no bail. You just tried to attack a sitting U.S. congressman. Now, riddle me this. If this had been an incumbent Democrat congressman or woman being attacked in such a way, do you not expect the state-controlled media and the leftists would be all the way across your face on a constant? You wouldn't even be able to go to the bathroom without hearing them rant and rave about, we need to make sure this guy is taken care of. It's probably one of those MAGA Trumpers, wasn't it? Just use the term because it fits their narrative. Which brings me to the January 6th committee having an eight public hearings. They say we got to keep having them because people keep coming forward. Now, it suggests to me that you're creating them and you're spreading it out, trying to take it as long as you can. And then they had, today, they actually produced testimony that, yeah, Trump did not try to seize the wheel of the presidential vehicle, as their star witness testified a couple of sessions ago. The star witness who admitted she was not even in the car, she heard about it from someone else. And the someone else later said, I'll testify. I never said that. That didn't happen. Well, that guy and the Secret Service agents were never called before the January 6th committee. Haven't been, probably will not be. Because, again, they really wanted to go with the fact that Trump tried to seize the wheel of the limo and drive it over to the Capitol to create more chaos. There was apparently a heated discussion, but he wasn't grabbing the wheel. And then on top of that, Congressman Benny Thompson, Democrat, chair of the committee, opened proceedings remotely and talking about that Donald Trump failed to stop rioters who were savagely beating and killing law enforcement officers. Now, fact is, some of those there were attacking police and beating on them, but they didn't kill any police officer. Not one police officer was killed by the, quote, rioters. The only death that occurred was the Air Force veteran Ashley Babbitt when she tried to climb through a broken window to get into the House chamber. She had a backpack on and the security shot her one time and killed her, not knowing, I can't let this person get inside the chamber. But don't let the facts interfere with the story, right? Coming up, John Daniel Davidson on how Democrats really don't want democracy.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Ackerman Toyota believes when you need service, you want genuine parts, certified mechanics, no hidden cost. You get all of that with Ackerman Toyota. Plus, if you're ready for a new car or pre-owned, see what Ackerman has on the lot or what's coming. Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel where I'll be just a lonely baby. Well, I'm so lonely.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
My guest we've had on numerous times before, always glad to have him on board. He's the senior editor at one of the senior editors at the Federalist, John Daniel Davidson. Welcome back, John.
Hey, thanks for having me, Larry.
I'm looking at a piece that you just put out. It refers to the wake of the demise of Roe v. Wade, and Democrats are doing all they can to thwart democracy, and you understate that Democrats say they love democracy, but when it produces laws they oppose, they'll use everything in their power to undermine it. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, the article refers to a series of actions taken by Attorney General Merrick Garland, the Department of Justice, as well as the Department of Health and Human Services, trying basically to force hospitals to continue performing abortions, even in states where abortion has been either outlawed or severely regulated following the end of Roe v. Wade. And they're trying to do this basically by executive fiat. There's no, you know, they're twisting the language of a 1986 law, EMTALA, which is just a federal law saying hospitals that get Medicare money have to accept people who can't pay in the emergency room. And they're trying to say that that law means hospitals that take Medicare money have to
perform abortions in emergency situations. And it's really a dishonest way to subvert the laws that have been passed in these states to the point, you know, earlier that they don't really like democracy when it produces laws they disagree with.
Well, I want to read a couple lines specifically from your article, because you're referring to the Health and Human Services Secretary Becerra sent out this abortion mandate for hospitals, again, reflecting on what you just discussed, that basically if an ER doctor determines that, quote, abortion is a stabilizing treatment necessary to resolve an emergency medical condition, the physician must provide that treatment. So if this is a doctor that does not favor abortions and that says there are plenty of other options, first of all, have the child as long as the mother's life's not in danger and adopt it, that doctor would, what, face legal action, loss of license, what?
Well, I mean, it's unclear what any of this is really supposed to do or how it's supposed to work, because, of course, the law that they're relying on, this EMTALA law, doesn't say anything about abortion. It certainly doesn't include abortion as the definition of necessary medical treatment. This is the Democrats taking their loose rhetoric around abortion. You know, they like to call it women's health care or reproductive health care, and they're just imputing that into a federal statute where it doesn't exist. So it's a cheap word game is what it is. And it's a way for them to get their abortion agenda enforced over and against the laws that have been passed in the states by representatives of the people of those states. So they don't want democracy for those states. They want to rule by administrative actions like the kind that we're seeing here.
Before you joined us in my opening segment today, we were talking about the case of the 10-year-old that had been raped, and she definitely was impregnated, 6 weeks, 3+ days, living in Ohio, and supposedly that was past their 6-week bill, so the doctor sent her to a doctor over in Indiana, and they've been making a big case out of that. That 10-year-old would have had to bear the baby. So Congressman Swalwell and a congressional committee is questioning a pro-lifer and saying, do you think that child should have that baby? Should that child? And I keep thinking, well, now, wait a minute. Are you trying to argue both sides here? You're saying, oh, you're all about women's rights and the women will make the decision. Now, I know a child 10 years old is too young to make that decision, just as I also know a 10 or 11 or 12-year-old is too young to decide they want to have a transsexual change.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, nobody ever accused the left of consistency or intellectual honesty. You know, so there's a freedom of choice, you know, when it comes to, you know, aborting an unborn child, killing an unborn child. But you can't have any freedom of choice or bodily autonomy when it comes to the COVID-19 vaccine, right? You just have to shut up and take the jab.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's inconsistency all the way through this. And every time, you know, this issue comes out, the hypocrisy and the intellectual inconsistency is just on full display. And I think, you know, you mentioned this case of a 10-year-old girl, terrible tragedy. But, you know, there's a way to approach these things where you don't have to be intellectually dishonest and you don't have to make up things in federal law that aren't there in order to address a lot of these complications.
Well, on
situations.
Top of that, when they started talking about the story and bringing it out, they withheld several pieces of information. We were not told that the doctor indicated the assaulter was a teenager, a minor also, maybe 17, is actually 27, in the country illegally, and now we know living with the mother and that child. So it doesn't reduce the trauma and what the child went through. But again, it's something they latched on to and say, see, this is what you guys created by saying the states will make the decisions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in the end, you know, the left kind of, you know, got what they wanted out of this situation insofar as they want abortions to be available. That's a big misconception. Overturning Roe v. Wade doesn't mean that you can't get an abortion in the United States. It just means you can't get an abortion under certain circumstances in some states. The fear mongering, the dishonesty, the narrative shifting is really disgusting from the Democrats, especially when it concerns a life and death issue like abortion. and especially when it concerns, you know, the freedom of doctors and hospitals to be able to practice in a way where they don't, they're not afraid. On the one hand, they're going to get in trouble for violating state law, and on the other hand, they're going to get in trouble with the federal government for not doing what Secretary of Health and Human Services told them to do in a memo.
So in this Texas case that has brought all this to the front, and the EMTALA statute, which is basically, let me get the exact wording again. You probably have it in top of your head. I'm afraid I don't. But basically, it is providing, you know, care. Or they wanted to stop dumping a lot of patients that couldn't pay for it in various hospitals was the main point. But again, said nothing about abortion. So now they're trying to force this. You point out in your article that in a decent country, and that's a key phrase, Texas would easily win this lawsuit. I consider this a decent country, but I still don't think they're going to win based on what they're trying to do at this point. Your view?
Well, I think the country is increasingly becoming indecent, largely because of the left and the sort of cultural and political war that they're waging on ordinary Americans. Yes, that Merrick Garland's DOJ has asked the judge to throw this lawsuit out, the lawsuit that Texas brought in response to the Health and Human Services memo, basically putting hospitals on notice that if they didn't perform abortions in the emergency room, according to the interpretation of Secretary Becerra, then they would be in trouble. So, you know, this is the kind of thing. The DOJ has been politicized. The Biden administration has weaponized both the DOJ and HHS, and they're going to use every tool at their disposal, and they have powerful tools. We live in an administrative state. They're going to use every tool at their disposal to undermine the laws that have come out of the democratic process at the state level that restrict or regulate abortion.
Well,
that's what we're
New
seeing
York,
here. This is
New
how
York,
they're doing it.
Yeah, and New York Democrat Congressman Rice said the pro-lifers have weaponized the word abortion, that you shouldn't use that word, that it brings up too many emotions, and we can't have a good discussion if you keep throwing that word in our face.
That's why they always refer to it as health care, yeah. As though ending a human life is health care. I mean, that's you know, sounds like Nazi, a Nazi talk there.
Yeah, I agree fully. You're listening to John Daniel Davidson, senior editor of The Federalist. And your closing line I want to share with the audience here. You said the next time you hear Biden or some other leading Democrat talk about threats to democracy, they don't care about democracy. They care about power. They'll use every ounce of it. If they have to advance their policies, the will of the people be damned.
Yeah, they don't like it when people vote the wrong way. Look what they did when the people elected Donald Trump as president in 2016. They freaked out, and they spent the next several years doing everything they could to undermine his presidency, to impeach him, to block his nominees, to handicap his administration. And they never really accepted that he won the presidency. Certainly Hillary Clinton never accepted
she
that.
She never did, so you're right.
Yeah, so you know, so it's just something to keep in mind. They don't really care about democracy. They care about power, and they use democracy, you know, sort of as a stalking horse for what they're really interested in, which is telling all of us how to live and what to do.
Yes, sir.
By administrative fiat.
John Daniel Davidson, The Federalist, thank you very much. And folks, coming up, we'll have a perfect example of one of those Democrats, like Nancy Pelosi, who lives the life she wants, but you can't, even if she's taking taxpayers' money to get richer.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
The other day, some listeners saw me in Cafe Napoli, and one said, "We see you here all the time." I said, "Yes, you do. I am the Cafe Napoli ambassador." Truth is, I've been a Napoli customer for decades, when there was only the Clayton location, then Town and Country, now St. Charles. Trust me, you'll enjoy great food, drinks, service. Cafe Napoli, Clayton, Town and Country, streets of St. Charles. And tell them the Cafe Napoli ambassador sent you.
You've been This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
One more, he said. Yes, sir.
Over the course of your career, has your husband ever made a stock purchase or sale based on information he's received?
What are you saying?
Over the course of your career, has your husband ever made a stock purchase or sale based on information you've received from you?
No. Absolutely not. Okay. Thank you.
No. Thank you. We're done. The reporter was trying to ask, what about your husband and some of his questionable stock transactions? At the same time, the Senate is preparing a vote that would directly benefit the industry he's invested in. The specific question is, over the course of your career, has your husband ever made a stock purchase or sale based on the information you've received as speaker? No, absolutely not. And she pushed the microphone down in front of her and then walked out. End of conversation. It was reported last week that Paul Pelosi, the husband of Speaker Pelosi, recently purchased $5 million in stocks in a semiconductor company, which is all lining up as the Senate prepares to vote on a bill this week, maybe now next week. I don't know if they're going to get it in time today, but that would give the semiconductor industry a $52 billion federal subsidy. The shares he bought worth anywhere between $1 million to $5 million now, if they suddenly have part of that $52 billion federal taxpayer money dumped into their hands, what do you think that's going to do to the value of the stock he's got? We're going to get into that in more detail with even other members of Congress. And then, of course, the case that's staring members of Congress and investigators right in the face, the Hunter Biden story and connections to Papa Joe, and how that's still being ignored by state-controlled media. But now here's an interesting twist, even from the New York Times. It published a series of op-eds by opinion columnists yesterday that began with the phrase, "I was wrong about." Among the collection, Brett Stevens admitted he was wrong to label Trump supporters appalling. He said, "The worst line I ever wrote." He wrote it about Trump. He said, "If by now you don't find Donald Trump appalling, you're appalling." He said, "I now regret what I said about the man and his close minions." He said, I think it probably did more to help and hinder Trump. Telling voters their moral ignoramuses is a bad way of getting them to change their minds. And what were they saying I wasn't? He said, "But I was blind to this. I belong to a social class, that my friend Peggy Noonan called the protected." But now he's acknowledging that he is privileged. He's got financial luxuries others don't have. He has a platform where he can say what he wants to in this opinion column for the New York Times. And he was calling out Trump supporters that you're appalling and Trump is appalling. And yet it is now published in the New York Times that he admits, "I was wrong. I shouldn't have said that about him." This is, of course, very similar, only this is just an opinion piece, a columnist, but similar to what the New York Times did on a news case basis when finally they acknowledged the laptop from hell did exist, as originally reported by the New York Post, but the New York Times wouldn't touch the story. The internet companies didn't want to touch it. In fact, shut down any tweets or information sent out by the New York Post, even promoting their story. And the same thing, of course, had happened with the Russian collusion thing. The thing that's happening now with the January 6th hearing. They just keep dragging it out because they don't really have anything. Their star witness the other day, now they're having to admit, as I said a moment ago, well, no one ever tried to grab the wheel from the Secret Service. There were heated words. That's a far cry from what they want you to think, that Trump tried to climb through the back of the limo from the far end all the way up to the front and grab a Secret Service agent by the neck and take control of the vehicle. That's what they wanted you to live with in their lasting statement. But it was all hearsay, because the woman making that statement did not witness anything like that. She was told it by someone else, who, when they heard about it, they went ballistic. Said, "I never said that. That didn't happen." And the Secret Service agent said, "Call us to testify. We will tell you it didn't happen." But they've already fired their shot. Let's go on. Let's just get more. So they're dragging this thing out and dragging it out, because they say new witnesses keep coming forward. I'm calling the BS card on that. You're fabricating as you always have been. And you're dragging it out thinking it might help you in midterm elections. Let me give you a secret. It won't. It won't help you at all. Coming up, how members of Congress are getting rich off of you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.